And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Ben Simmons.
Let's be honest, there's 29 NBA teams and then there's a G League roster with a few stars.
They have a math problem offensively.
Right in your podcast face.
Man, you tell them to keep having fun because everybody, you know, y'all played in the league. Everybody be like, oh, it's just a regular season, just a regular season. You're right, but you got to play the games that's in front of you.
We're the group that works like they do, the group that embraces some of our mantras. We talk about getting better every day. We talk about playing together. When you do those things, you end up on a stage like this. For our city of Milwaukee, NBA champions. Yeah. It's big time.
They have a math problem offensively.
This is Nerder, She Wrote, with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo Dekeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
You see, young. Wait!
This organization, what we put together, you can't make this up.
It's Friday. That means it's Nerd Who She Wrote on the Athletic NBA Show. I am not Dave Dufour. I'm Jared Weiss.
Who the hell is this guy?
It's Dave Dufour with the hair on the top, basically.
It's freakish.
All right. Well, the freaks I'm talking to, it's Mo Dekeel, the last one you just heard. And the guy in the blank baseball cap is Seth Partnow out in Milwaukee. Mo out in the LA area. And let's talk about that. Because the Lakers are in a very interesting part of their journey as a franchise. I mean, I'm trying to be a little glass half full, because I know you guys are about to shit all over them. So Frank Vogel is still the coach as of us recording this at noon on Thursday, January 20th. Mo, why is he still the coach, and what do you think is coming down the pike soon?
I mean, he's getting fired at some point. It's just a matter of timing. Like, whenever... During the week, the Lakers get a big win over Utah, and they say that win saved Frank Vogel's job. And at that point, you're like, if one win really saves your job, the next loss probably going to cost you your job. And they blow a 15-point lead against Indiana their next game, which was last night. We're obviously recording Thursday. It's just a disaster. So you can just feel it when he's walking down the hallway. Somebody's just yelling, "Dead man walking."
I'm annoyed on his behalf. I think anytime we start to get this blow by blow of a coach about to get fired, and it seems like the two places we kind of have this coming out of most are the Lakers and Kings, and that's not a group you want to be in. And it's just, it's Bush League. If you're going to fire him, fire him. We don't have to get this constant messaging of, you know, everyone being on the same page about benching Westbrook and all that nonsense. Like, if you're going to do it, do it. I think it's stupid to do it, but you can't fire the players. And Rob Pelinka isn't going to fire himself for assembling a terrible roster. So it's going to happen. Stop, as Morpheus says in The Matrix, stop trying to hit me and hit me.
Right. And the thing that's really annoying about it really is the guys who are evaluating him are the ones that put together this crap roster. Like, let's just be honest right there. When we get it, Russell Westbrook was LeBron James's call. Okay, fine. You let Caruso walk, which would have been a guard that you would want next to a guy like Russell Westbrook, who's not a good defender. You want to kind of shore that up. No, you went with THT because you thought, hey, he's going to have promise. He's going to take a leap this year because it's something you can easily predict. And in fact, he hasn't. He's regressed. I don't think he's very good. And when you look at all those things, it's all the moves they've made after it. They've gotten a couple of hits. Couple of areas they haven't. And during the course of the year, we can't evaluate this team because we don't have Trevor Ariza and Kendrick Nunn. It's like, are you guys really, if those are the two key pieces, I can evaluate your team already. It's a shit team. you know, you're in a bad situation. If those are the two key pieces that are going to make you be able to see this team, it's a garbage team in that sense. And it's shocking to say when you have LeBron and AD on that team, but it's just everything they put together is just rubbish. And the way they've kind of done everything, it's a disaster. And now they have no trade chips. Even if they were to trade Westbrook, it would be one of those trades where they would have to send out assets. They're not getting anything good back in return. And, you know, their biggest chip is THT, who I think a lot of the league is split on how good he is. So it's a problem for them. And, you know, sure, now we're just going to put it all on Frank Vogel's feet because, hey, we wanted a better defense.
You should probably have better defensive players if you want
shocking.
Better defense, right?
Shocking.
Like if your best thought. If your best defenders are Avery Bradley and Trevor Ariza at this point in their career, like you're you know, that's it's just not going to work. They did okay with there's some like their minimum signings and stuff like that, but if you're having to fill out, okay, well, we've got these 10 minimum spots and we need to get four rotation players from them, you're already sort of behind the eight ball. And maybe that can work if you're building, you know, we got 10 minimums and we've got, you know, prime LeBron, prime Wade, prime Bosh. You got some margin for error if it's late prime, if we're generous, LeBron, and banged up AD and the other guy, you have kind of negative margin for error. And that's how it's played out. I mean, this is the annoying thing about this is just how predictable it is that it was going to go this way. It's like they're going to suck. Vogel's going to take the blame. It's going to be a panic and you know, a giant mess and who knows what's going to happen. And it's played out that way and everyone's acting surprised.
Right. And then it's funny when it's a guy like all of a sudden Kurt Rambis's name shows up. You know, I had forgotten he was with the organization, and all of a sudden, you know, this bastion of winning, Kurt Rambis is all of a sudden getting involved and showing up in coaches' meetings going, hey, why aren't you playing DeAndre Jordan more? Because DeAndre Jordan sucks right now. Plain and simple. He hasn't been good since he was with the Clippers. Like, if we're just looking at, honestly, what he brings to the table. And it's just, this is the kind of stuff where it's like, honestly, if they fire Frank Vogel, it shouldn't be any of the assistants to take over. It should either be Rambis or Pelinka. You're the guys that put the team together. Clearly, you know how this team should play in your vision. So you should be the ones to coach this team. And if you don't get it done at the end of this season, you should be the one fired. And it starts with ownership. And that's where Jeannie Buss has got to step up. But, you know, that's the thing where I look at and I just watch this team and everything they've done really since they've won the championship is tough. You know, like they have a championship roster, they tear it down, add a whole new bunch of pieces. I think they have a chance still to beat the Phoenix Suns if everybody was healthy. If the, you know, a little bit of bad luck, fine, no problem. Instead of bringing everybody back and trying to run it back again or make a couple of minor changes, they blow the whole thing up and now they're back themselves into a corner with no ability to change anything. I mean, they've really screwed the pooch in all of this.
You have the formula, which has been a good formula for every stop in his career. LeBron, one other star, defense and shooting. And you just go the complete other way because you want another name. Yeah, I don't understand that. Yeah. There's some strange voices that have too much influence here. And, you know, it's almost emblematic of how sports teams can put themselves in bad spots when they over-index on sort of team legends and nepotism rather than proven competence and preparation for a job. Like what has Kurt Rambis done after his playing career that should lead you to believe that this is someone who is going to make winning basketball calls?
I mean, his best run was being an assistant for Phil Jackson after his playing career. Like that's really all it is. And all of this stuff
that's a coaching tree with a lot of strong branches.
Oh God. You know, but, and when you look at it, it's just like, when you look at, first off, the other problem with this team is they literally let LeBron make every decisions. You know, make the Westbrook thing was a big mistake and everybody knew it in the moment. And, you know, we talk about how general managers, team presidents have to manage owners and things like that, you also have to manage the players. Pelinka has to step. If you're going to be good at the job, you have to say, hey, that's not the trade we want to make, and outline why, and then do it. But instead, you just said LeBron wants this, he gets whatever he wants, and now you have, what is it, like 50-something million sitting on your books this year and next year? Whatever his contract is, maybe it's 45 or 47. Yeah, it's
like mid-high 40s for next year, which is still just a giant anchor.
You're not going to be able to trade him.
Yeah.
And you don't have any draft picks to add to the trade. You know, you're not going to trade your 2028 draft pick at this point if you're the Lakers to get rid of Russ. And it's just – that's, you got to manage your players as well and manage building your roster together, you know, and I think they just put themselves in such a bad situation really this year. And I don't know how much better they get next year. Maybe it's a little bit easier with Russ being an expiring, but
LeBron's not getting any younger.
No, he's not. And we're seeing it. He's not driving to the rim as much. He's not, he's sitting outside shooting more and things like that. Like, it's just, you're putting more on him. In that sense, and I guess that's where you needed AD to step up, but you're depending on a guy that, for the most part, is relatively injury prone, and that's not his fault. He just gets hurt. Okay, but it's you've just kind of put yourself in a position where it's like, wow, these are the guys we're depending on, and okay, but we can't evaluate the roster till Kendrick Nunn comes back.
And that was, the AD getting hurt. You could see that coming from the start of the year. I remember the first couple weeks of the season, we talked about them putting a hard miles on AD. And it wasn't just like the minute load. He wasn't playing an exorbitant minute load. But when he was out there, he was having to do everything defensively and be like 1A offensively. And for a guy who, has durability concerns, that's not where you want to be in October and November if you're looking towards May and June. It's everything about this was so foreseeable. And that's what makes it frustrating that there's a shock that Frank Vogel wasn't able. Who makes this roster anyway? We've talked enough about this.
I just want to touch on this one thing. This is where coaching is unfair. The job as a coach is unfair, right? Like, everybody points to Laker fans go nuts after every game complaining about the rotations and things like that. The rotations ain't the problem. Sure, Austin Reeves, play him more. Okay, whatever. You're still going to lose games. You're not in a position really to win those games, and it's just so easy to get rid of the coach and point to, well, he's the problem. I'll tell you right now, whoever you bring in ain't going to fix this right now.
And, and even the Austin Reeves thing, like it comes out after the game last night that the front office was on board with benching Russ, which is either, okay, go away, or it's some like after the fact, yes, we're in charge here stuff. And so, if you can pretty easily identify that, like, that might be the way you want to go. But if you're not actually empowered to do that, if like, nope, we gotta maintain his value. We gotta save that relationship. And that's kind of natural, like give and take, but like, that's not the choice to play vets over, Stanley Johnson and Austin Reeves. I think it's fairly safe to say that that's not like a decision that Vogel and the coaching staff is empowered to make unilaterally.
Do you actually think that there's some feasibility to putting Rambis actually on the bench at an interim capacity this year if they were to fire Vogel?
Oh, God. Like, what this roster screams is a roster that should run the triangle.
No, it's I would say? There isn't much of an advantage. It's almost, when I make that suggestion, it's more like a, F you.
You broke it, you bought it.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's very difficult in a coaching situation. Like, we heard Bill Parcells say this in football. God, I hope I got that right. Not his name, but he's the one with the quote of like, you want me to cook the dinner, but you won't let me buy the groceries. And I'm not saying Frank Vogel should be in charge, right? But we're just saying like, they gave Frank Vogel these groceries, and expected a, five course meal. But really, they just gave him like mozzarella sticks, chicken tenders, and spam. Right. And okay, make an amazing meal out of this. Like, this ain't Top Chef, man. He ain't gonna be able to do that. Like, it's not, it's just not.
This is Chopped All Stars.
Yeah, there's just so much team building That, like, there's so much, just like when you build a roster together, you got to think of all these things. And when you're the front office, you got to think about how can we maneuver if this stuff doesn't work. They made all these moves thinking we're fine, you know, and THT doesn't have the trade value. I think they think it does, you know, and packaging him with Kendrick Nunn and, you know, their name is attached to every available player. They have no feasible way to get such player.
Because those are the only guys who make any sort of money to go into a trade as matching salary. So that's more than anything else, not just the value of their players, just the mechanics of, like, okay, he like Carmelo could probably actually help a contender as like a shooter off the bench eighth man, but he's making the minimum. So what do you do with that? You're not going to go get a frontline player, because a frontline player who's making the minimum is probably on a rookie deal, and you're not trading a guy on a good rookie deal for, 38-year-old Carmelo.
No, and the funny thing is Carmelo's probably been the most consistent Laker. He's effort-wise, he's trying every time he's on the court. He's actually trying defensively, which shocks the hell out of me, but he may not make the right play, but he's trying in that sense. It's just, it's frustrating because it's what Seth said. They had the roadmap. They had the blueprint for how to build this team. And they literally just tore it up. And we're going to go a different route. And, they've put themselves in a bad position. But I think that's enough talk of the purple and gold team.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
All right, should we move on to the Celtics then? Since we got to find a team that seems like they're in the exact same situation with the same problems and they are the rivals. So, for people that don't know me, I covered the Celtics for the Athletic, so I'll have plenty to say on this one. But they are a team that just continues to float up and down around 500. Jason Tatum is probably going to make the All-Star team, even though he's having a horrendous shooting season. But I guess that's just how All-Star teams work at this point. But the Celtics have a team full of non-shooters, and there's a couple shooters who are getting increasing minutes. And we haven't seen that yield too many big results yet, though they did go on a nice little winning streak recently. So, Seth, we'll start with you. Do you see any positive momentum for the Celtics? And then what do they do with the deadline?
They're short of a drink stirrer. Like, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown are obviously very good, like wing scores. Neither of them have really developed as a playmaker. And you say they have non-shooters. I don't really think that's the case. They have guys who can finish. Like Aaron Nesmith on teammate created shots has been pretty efficient. Grant Williams is shooting the crap out of it now. Well, that will continue. Who knows? Like, Robert Williams is one of the best lob threats in the NBA. What they don't have is anything that can unlock these kind of finisher type players, because as creative as Brown and Tatum are on the ball, they're mostly creative for themselves. And then their one like most creative player is Dennis Schroeder, who's fine. Like, he's not a guy who's going to unlock stuff. He's going to make some plays that are there, but he's not going to necessarily.
He's not going to create it.
Yeah.
He's going to see it and it's available. I can make that pass. Yeah. He's not going to create that pass in the way that Chris Paul would. And it's a whole different level of player. But that's what the difference we're talking about between the two. Sorry, Seth.
I think that's exactly right. I think that's the issue there is that you think about it, they have like the decline in the playmaking talent they have over the last couple of years, having lost, Gordon Hayward, Kyrie Irving, Kemba Walker, maybe even go back a little further, Isaiah Thomas. Like, that's, at a certain point, you keep kind of dropping down. like that ability, and now they just don't have enough of it on their roster, and it's exposing kind of the role playerness of their role players, which is, I guess, circular, but I think you understand what I'm saying.
Somebody does. Yeah. just kidding. No, Seth's assessment's right on. Jared, you see it all the time, you know, when you watch them, right? Like, I did a whole thread. Like, there's a big difference of when they're getting into their offense early and the ball's moving and the guys are looking to make those extra passes. It looks really good. And then there's the nights where it's just one-on-one and you're just dependent on Jalen having a big night or Jason having a big night, and they can win you a game off of those nights. And it disguises those issues that Seth is talking about, but they're a lot closer, I think, than people realize to being a very good team, you know, in my opinion, because they're just missing that piece. Like, if they could have found a way to get Lonzo Ball or even Ricky Rubio in the offseason last year, like, those are the kind of guys. It doesn't have to be a high level guy like Chris Paul, but it's like those kinds of guys that would just move the ball immediately without thinking would change this team's outlook massively.
Yeah, it was kind of surprising they didn't get Lonzo, because it really seemed like there was a lot of momentum to them landing Lonzo last year. And it's pretty obvious now he would be the exact guy that they need. And, you know, this team is what's funny, actually, is the one thing I disagree with Seth is that Tatum has actually made a lot of progress as a playmaker. He's doing a much better job of kind of controlling the dribble, getting into the teeth of the defense, and then finding, you know, the reads. And then he's throwing it to guys that are breaking their shots every single time. And this team has really bounced back and forth between nights where Tatum and Brown are playmaking really well and everyone's just missing wide open shots, or nights where the defense can't really or the defense shuts them down. And then the rest of the team is able to kind of step up, but they just never really get it at the same time.
So I agree with that. I think you are, when we're talking about, you know, the argument against kind of break up the Celtics is they have these two dominant wings. And the one thing, if you look at them, where they sort of fall short relative to the other like top level dominant offensive wings in the league, is they're both just a little bit less efficient and don't play make as much as those, like, you know, you compare those guys to, you know, a Paul George or a Jimmy Butler, or, you know, going higher like a LeBron. That's where, like, yes, he's gotten better at that, but to be kind of the A1 alpha on a contention level team, he's kind of short of that bar as a playmaker. Because, I mean, yes, it's a high bar I'm setting, but we're talking about being like one of the four best teams in the league, which is the goal, right? And to have that needs to be just another level or two up even than where he is. Like, he's a good but certainly sub-elite playmaker. And I think that's the distinction we're drawing.
I mean, just look at the growth DeMar DeRozan has made as a playmaker when he was in San Antonio. I think that's kind of what you're hoping for from Tatum over time. And you know, it's I don't think it's a lot to ask for, but it's hard, you know, and it's hard to develop. And I think the other thing the Celtics need to do a little bit better that's not related to those two guys or built team building. They need to let the role players stretch their legs a little bit. Right. It feels like they're very confined to a certain role. Right. Like, I think somebody made the point somewhere in the millions of podcasts I listen to, so I apologize, you know, but like, if they didn't trade Desmond Bane to Memphis, would Desmond Bane be the player that he is now? And it's something we've talked about before on Nerder, of like situation and stuff matters. Would they have allowed Bane to grow, or would it just been go stand in the corner when you get the ball and you're open, shoot it? It's along those kinds of things that I think they need to start working that a little bit more, and it would make things a little easier for Tatum and Brown in that environment. The only other guy that really gets to stretch his legs is Marcus Smart. And to be honest, I kind of want him to stretch less, you know, and let some of the other guys get going. So I think that's a important thing when you look at the Celtics. But it's been a tough season for them, and it's the same team that they brought in last year. Everybody's upset that, you know, at Udoka, but it's this team. This was the same issues they had under Brad Stevens.
I think I've got almost a perfect comparison for that. You know, I think we've all been sort of surprised at how Jared Allen has been able to expand his game this year. And I think he's an all-star. I think I'm pretty well known as being a big Robert Williams supporter. I think Robert Williams is a guy who has a lot more, his skill level is kind of a lot higher than it's allowed to show. Yeah, there's going to be some ugly things that happen if he gets to stretch more, but let's see it. Let's try it. Let's see how far that can go. And you know, maybe it turns out actually he can do these things. And then you end up with, you know, Jared Allen, who's still shooting 70, whatever percent from the floor while putting the ball on the floor, while making some plays for himself, not just being a dive and dunk guy. He's making high, low entry passes. Robert Williams is a pretty good passer. Like, dude, let him do some more stuff. Let's see. Like you're not winning the title this year. So let's see is a little bit where I'm in agreement with Mo.
This is one of those things that people overlooked when the Spurs would do the load management of their guys with Tim, Tony, and Manu. It wasn't just to rest those guys. It was to let Pop see what the other guys could do. Let's give some of these guys bigger roles in a game and see how they handle that in those opportunities. Granted, it wasn't the main reason why they were doing it, but it was almost like an added bonus of that. And that's the stuff there. And I think I'm right there with Seth. Like, you got to let these guys expand their games. That's development. You can't just keep them all stifled in this box, and it can't just all fall on Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum's feet. Like, you got to have some of these other guys kind of get opportunities and be able to figure it out.
I think we've kind of seen the limits of the one guy or two guys create all the offense, everyone else stand around. And basically, except for prime LeBron, that basically hasn't worked at a high level. It's like you get to a certain point and then, you know, the James Harden Rockets. Now we can argue whether they should have beat Golden State one of those years. Maybe. But it's still like, okay, guys got tired. Like, your main guys get tired and everyone else isn't prepared to step up because they've been standing in the corner all year. And so I think this is like the I talked about with on my own podcast, I talked this with Brad Rowland the other day about the Hawks too, and how kind of they're so reliant on Trey to do everything that the other guys don't get to, like Mo was saying, don't get to stretch as much.
All right, we'll get to the Hawks in a second, but yeah. You know, I want to go back to what you were saying about Rob Williams, because there was probably the only good win that they've had in a while was they blew out Phoenix, and Rob Williams was mostly used as a passer from the high post in that game, and he was doing so much of the playmaking. And I wrote a story about it, asked Ime Udoka about it a lot. He said it's something that they like and they're going to look into more. And it's only shown up a couple times since then. And, you know, a lot of it was the way the coverages were with Phoenix. Not every team is, you know, switching the same way that they are. But it was just surprising to see them kind of find gold and then not really dig it back up again. And this team, whenever they start to make progress, they eventually kind of default back to a lot of middle pick and roll and isolation and mismatch hunting with Brown and Tatum and Schroeder, who at least Schroeder has been red hot lately shooting the ball. And so his numbers have been pretty good as he's been starting for Smart.
But the key there is, again, kind of like the other two, it's still a little bit his numbers have been good and not necessarily unlocking the rest of the guys. And I don't want to beat that dead horse anymore, but that's where, like, from an offensive standpoint, the Celtics are really just falling short.
I mean, we're going to beat a lot of the dead horses today.
What are we doing this show?
Yeah, no horses were harmed in the making of this.
Because they were already dead.
Oh. Yeah, damn, Seth. I mean, I got much worse. Especially with that voice. This is like a bad episode of Yellowstone all of a sudden.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Speaking of horrible things, the Atlanta Hawks, they did beat the Wolves 134-122 on Wednesday, and Trae Young had 37 points and 14 dimes. He looked great in that game, but up until that point, he has not been looking good ever since he sat out a game, and the team was on a 10-game home losing streak up until that point. So what do you think is going on with Trae, Mo, and what's going on with Atlanta?
I don't know if I know necessarily what's going on with Trae, but I think just Atlanta itself has... This has been a very frustrating team after what they did in the conference finals and the way they've kind of approached this season. You know, we crushed Trae at the beginning of the season when he talked about the regular season seems boring to me after what we did last year, which is, hey, you got in a fluky situation, got to the conference finals. Like, that's great. Celebrate it. But you got to get back to work. You know, it's a stark difference between the way the Phoenix Suns had approached the season this year, where it's literally business-like mentality with the way they go about games. And, you know, it's that has kind of carried over and they haven't been able to get going. And I think there's a lot of frustration. You know, we've seen John Collins already spouting off and he seems like he wants to be on the move here after signing his restricted deal. There's just like a whole bunch of stuff where it's to me, they just have too many guys that want to do stuff. And the ball's just in one guy's hands the whole time. And it's like Seth was saying earlier, nobody else is allowed to stretch their legs. It's just all Trae Young.
And to some extent, their problems have been, they've been really bad defensively. And they've played, I believe, zero games with all of Capella, Okongwu, and Hunter available. So that's their three best defenders have played none games together. And by the way, how good does Okongwu look now that he's back on the court?
He looks great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Which is
USC zone, by the way.
Yeah. Which is, it's weird. Again, I said I had Brad on my podcast earlier this week, and just the idea that like they're just never, when Capella comes back, they're never going to try playing the two of them together. And I just, you got to get that guy in the court. You just got to. And they're going to struggle to do that. Cause Collins needs to play also. So anyway, yeah, no, the idea that they had accomplished something already when they have to do it all again, and it didn't seem like they were ready to do that. And they've had some bad luck this year in terms of those injuries, but it's maybe you have to almost preemptively change things up to keep it fresh. And they basically changed nothing from last offseason. Like the big roster change is like DeLon Wright, who's been good for them. He's actually injected some since he's gotten more playing time. He's injected some stuff to their team, but it was just kind of the same situation as last year. And it was a situation that was always sort of set up to have some fractures, some fissures if things didn't go well because of, like you said, the division of touches. Cam Reddish is up for a payday, going to be up for an extension, and they already paid Kevin Huerter, and they're obviously committed to DeAndre Hunter. So there's that inherent tension, and you're kind of balanced on a knife edge, and it kind of fell off one way, and it seems like it's just spiraled from there.
I mean, just to touch on your point about how bad they've been defensively, they have the second best offensive rating in the league right now. and the 28th defensive rating. Like, that's a massive gap right there. You're just not going to win games, you know, and they just went through a whole run. What was it like? An entire month where they didn't win a home game?
When they went almost 2 months without winning. I mean, they didn't play that many, but they still, like, going 2 months without winning a home game for a team that thinks they're going to – that thought they were going to challenge for conference final spot is – that's, you know, that's how you take care of business, and they just weren't.
And I think the big problem is, you know, Travis Schlenk went out and said it on radio, local radio in Atlanta, saying, like, I brought everybody back and I shouldn't have. You know, and I think there was also an element of just having too many guys. You know, part of me is I still think, like, Bogdanović is underused. I think that's a guy they could put the ball in his hands a little bit. Musset just made a face. Maybe.
I think he's been hurt and not great this year. But no, I think that's why they gave him the big, you know, the big deal in restricted free agency. You're not paying him $18 million a year to go stand in the corner. You're paying him that because he can be more than that. But aside from a bit at the end of last year when he, like, you know, like, scorched his own eyes out, he was shooting so well. Like, they haven't really used him as anything but an off-ball, take a shot guy.
Just another guy for Trey to play with. That's really kind of the way they used it. And it's, you know, when you look at that kind of attitude, it does make it difficult for players to find a rhythm, feel comfortable, you know, and it goes back to the Celtics side of letting guys stretch their legs there a little bit. And it's challenging, you know, and I mean, six games under 500 right now, they're still not far out of the play-in tournament. But even though I had lower expectations for them this season, I didn't think they'd be a play-in team. I'm still a little caught off guard by how bad they've been. And it's, some of it is just, they're not figuring out how to work together again, you know, and it's beginning to look like, hey, they just caught lightning in a bottle last year and now it's all gone. And I don't know, you know, they're going to make some trades. They're going to make a few, sounds like they're going to make a big swing here, but I don't know if that's really going to make a massive difference for this season.
Remember how we were talking about the Hawks before they made the coaching change last year? If you don't, I think you just listened to the last, you know, 5 or 10 minutes we just said, and I think it's basically the same thing we just said, which is, you know, after they kind of switched coaches and they galvanized, got some wins, and it all came together, and they haven't had any like, they haven't had that moment of okay, let's do this thing now this year. And it has looked a little bit like a bunch of people rowing in different directions.
We'll see how they look when they bring Lloyd Pierce back after the fire. No. But assuming that doesn't happen, you know, because
Frank Vogel might be available soon.
Yeah, there we go.
Trade coaches. Let's get a coaches trade.
I don't hate the trade deadline. I don't hate that idea.
Can you use that to salary match with Russ? So this is a team whose offense is driven significantly by a point guard. Trying to think of recent examples where that worked. I mean, you had like Harden and Chris Paul together, that worked pretty well, or relatively, I guess, considering how far they were getting. Does Trey need another, like, do they need to consolidate a lot of their good players and get another, you know, all-star-ish tier caliber playmaker to put next to Trey?
Yes, but that's tough if because he needs to be willing to play off the ball more. And, you know, and you know, we haven't seen him paired with that type of player, so we don't know if he'd accept it or not. Like, I think that's sort of more, probably more last year than this year, because their roster's been so weird. But that was one of the heartening things about when James Harden first got to the Nets last year, was he was willing to kind of adjust his role to accommodate playing with these other guys. And so maybe if the Hawks acquire a guy of kind of all-star or all-star adjacent stature, a wing player, maybe Trey will be amenable to kind of shifting his role a little bit. But we talked about with the Celtics. I am very skeptical of ability to win at the highest level, like with one guy being so dominant. And this, you know, this frankly applies to Dallas too. I think we've had this complaint about the Mavericks in the postseason, where it's like, hey, Luka looks like he wears down, and the Hawks have blown some fourth quarter leads this year. And I think it's all sort of a piece with, as you're suggesting, needing that variety.
I mean, it's, it would help, but it comes down to Trey being willing to do that, right? Like, I know Seth loves when Trey dribbles down the court and pulls up from like 38 feet with like 19 seconds on the shot clock. It's his favorite shot in the game, folks. Don't get fooled by all this analytic stuff. You should see the text messages. He loves that shot. And, you know, it's frustrating, though, for everybody else. It's one of those things as a teammate, you know. John Collins has even made comments about this, you know, where it's just like, that's the shot we get. You know, like, there are other guys out there. And Young is in that second half of the season with McMillan, you know, when he took over, Young did a better job of getting other guys involved and getting other guys touches. But it's, you know, he's got that passing ability. It isn't, you know, it's just a willingness to do it. And I think that's the important thing. And the other thing is, they got to get Young off the ball. That's what I thought they were going to do with Bogdanovich. It's clearly not working. Everything, you know, Seth said. So, you know, maybe you do need to bring in a guy that can command that respect from Trey to get Trey to do it. You know, I think this team's actually really missing honestly, they're just missing a good vet, you know, to really just be able to slap everybody around. They need Charles Oakley. or something of that type, right? And
he's still available to slap people around. I mean, I'm sure they could get him in the building.
Oh yeah, no. You can pay for it on Cameo. Bad joke, Charles Oakley. If you listen, please don't come after me. Seth said it. But along those lines, they need a vet presence there. Gallinari's not that guy. Lou Williams is not that guy. They need the guy there that's going to say what needs to be said. That's going to command the respect of everybody, and they don't have that. And I just. It's such a weird season for how it went for them so far. It's been odd.
Collins is willing to say it, but he probably doesn't quite have the stature to make it stick.
One quick thing before we move on from Atlanta, bringing up that Trey Young coming down the floor and pulling up thing. This is just something I was just asking Ime Udoka about, because I've seen Jason Tatum do it a bunch, is a lot of players, I guess star players, when they bring the ball down the floor, the defense sags off them a little bit, they love to launch. And I'm curious, Seth and Mo too, I guess if I have to hear what Mo has to say about this, what do you think of guys taking those shots, thinking that they're good open shots, if it's kind of just like a wasting a possession to a degree kind of shot?
I think that it's probably more frustrating if the guy taking the shot is a passenger on defense. Like, if Jason Tatum D's his guy up, like blocks a layup at the rim, gets the rebound, dribbles down the floor, and decides he wants to pull up. Okay, maybe you earned that. But I think we've probably seen the highlights of Trey kind of no efforting on defense this year. And I think that's the part that's frustrating, is like, we just busted our ass for 20 seconds rotating, covering for you, and you're going to come down and do that in 4 seconds, and now we've got to run back and do it again. Like, that's the part that really exacerbates the frustration. And I think that a guy who is more of a two-way player probably has a little more equity with his teammates for that. But you don't, you can only take that so far.
If you're going to do it, you better be a guy like Steph Curry and Damian Lillard. In that sense too, where even if you're not a two-way guy, but like, if you're going to do it, you better have the cachet. Steph Curry is the all-time three-point shooter in the league. You know, he can shoot from anywhere, and you're just going to say, okay, you know, Dame has a history of making those shots in that stuff. And so does Trey, but
not to the same extent though.
Is right. I mean, Dame sent a team home and broke up a team off of that in a playoff series. You know, it's along those lines. It goes back to something Quinn Snyder used to say about the Jazz. And it's like, I need the ball moving so I keep everybody engaged on the defensive end. You're more interested in playing defense if you're getting touches on the other. You're getting the feel of the ball and things like that. And every time they do that, that's a missed opportunity, right? And I hate any offensive possession, make or miss, when the ball is in one player's hands the entire time, you know, and even if they get a good shot out of it, right, and they dribble the air out of it for 20 seconds, you didn't put any pressure on the defense, you didn't really incorporate your teammates, that's one possession where you did all the work, and now your other teammates are like, well, shoot, if he gets the ball again, like, I'm just chilling. And it kind of just naturally develops into that, and I think that's an important thing there. And those shots, they can be deflating. For everything Seth said, you get a stop on one end, and you know, this is the shot we get. Always brutal.
I like how I made fun of Mo before. Then he goes into this beautiful monologue that incorporates every single element of the question I was hoping for. This guy's a pro. All right, let's finish with.
I'm a professional. Okay, Jared, I don't know about you, but I'm a pro.
I'm just trying to live in your honor. Okay, let's get to the last pair of teams here. We had on Wednesday the Clippers and the Nuggets have an overtime thriller that ended with Nikola Jokic getting double teamed and somehow throwing a cross-court pass to Aaron Gordon in the corner who buried the three. That was a clincher for them. Nikola Jokic had a 49-point triple-double, which somehow doesn't seem insane because it's Nikola Jokic. And so these are, Seth, you wanted to talk about these two teams because they're kind of in this weird limbo. They have stars that are out. And Denver's case seems a lot. Actually, no, I guess it's pretty concerning in both cases. But let's start with Denver. How has Denver evolved without Jamal Murray and without Michael Porter Jr.? And I guess what do you think is their destination as this team kind of continues to figure out how to work without those guys?
I mean, the team is just it's limited without them, and they're dangerous on any given night because Jokic is that good. But Jokic has to be that good. And so when we talk about limbo, it's like this is a team that's going to win some games and make the playoffs and probably win a playoff game or two, maybe even sneak out a series win. But they're not. We saw it in the second round last year when it was like they had a nice first round win, and then it's just we don't have enough to compete here, and that's a weird spot to be, especially when you have a guy who's on the short list of the very best players in the league right now. Like you want it, like there's a 4 or 5 person list. Jokic is on there, he's high on that list, but you're still just kind of don't have enough around him, even though you have some, you like some of the other pieces. Aaron Gordon has been very good for them since he came over, especially when he was in the role he should be playing. And you've got a number of, interesting guards but without, especially Jamal Murray, you just don't have enough.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I mean, it took Jokic having that 49-point triple-double to beat the Clippers in overtime, right? And a very depleted Clippers team as well. So it's, to Seth's point, like, Jokic has to go to superhuman levels to fall short. Like, they're not going to – it's just they don't have the firepower to win a championship with all that. The stuff they're taking away from, though, this is one of those years, I think, they get an opportunity to just look at everybody and see who is our guys for next season. I still wish they would give Bones Highland more minutes. You can shake your heads.
Obvious. This is a Bones fan podcast, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, I just like saying the name Bones. Yeah. That's a hell of a name.
We're titling this the Boneyard episode, obviously.
Yeah. Plain and simple. In the sense of they went into this year with lower expectations just with Jamal Murray. And then Michael Porter Jr. goes out. All the injuries that they've had. It's not just been those two guys, right? It felt like there was a run early in the season where it was like when the Nuggets played a game, somebody was going down. And knock on wood, hopefully they're over that. But what's promising about it is you're seeing this success right now with the way this team is, and you're just thinking like, man, if we get our pieces together next season, like we're really going to be something. You know, Seth touched on Aaron Gordon finally playing the role he should be playing it. It's been awesome for them, and I think they're just getting a lot of good stuff out of this. I think they're getting a lot of good institutional knowledge of just learning about themselves in a way. And as a front office, you get to kind of evaluate it and look at it going like, all right, well, these are areas we still need to fix and improve on. How do we go about that?
Mo, let me ask you, and this is maybe as even more applicable to the Clips, given that, Kawhi's been out all year and Paul George has been, suffering this a very strange, like the UCL is not a normal basketball injury. And then for folks who don't know this, that's like players get Tommy John surgery and miss a year if like a baseball pitcher gets a UCLA injury.
No, screw UCLA. This is a UCLA hateful podcast. Talk about that school on the other way.
Sorry, my bad. But were any of the teams that you were with, was it just kind of we ever like it's just not happening this year because our main guys are out or it's not working? Have you ever been on a team where it's like you know you're good, but it's just not this year, and how you manage that season?
It's really interesting. The my first year in San Antonio, you know, was the year we traded for Richard Jefferson at the draft or right around that time. And the expectations literally right after that trade was, yo, you're going to go win a championship. Like the Spurs are going to go win a championship now that they have Richard Jefferson, perfect piece, blah, 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 all that stuff. Like I was leaving the Clippers and like people were like, yeah, man, you're going to come back with a ring. You know, like that was the level we're at. And we just couldn't figure it out for like 2/3 of the season. And we ended up finishing, I think, 6th that season. Won the first round matchup against the Mavs and things like that. But we just couldn't get it right, you know, and things just didn't click well. There was a lot of frustration, you know. I remember being in the video room and talking with James Borrego and Chip England. You know, we're just after a loss and we're just like, what the hell's wrong with this team, you know, and we just couldn't really pinpoint it, you know, because all the pieces were there. And it just didn't seem to click yet. And, you know, obviously the next season it did. You know, it clicked. We were the number one seed. Of course, we got beat by Memphis. I tried to block that from memory. But that season was really eye-opening to me where it's like, it's not just plug and play. You know, put all these guys here and then go. You know, it was along the lines of like, there's a lot of work that comes with it. And it took us, I mean, it took them a year to really figure it out. And they got a great shooting year from Richard Jefferson the following year. The first year was a lot of frustration. And I felt bad for RJ. Like he was frustrated. You know, he came in and he's supposed to be the missing piece and it just didn't click. It tends to happen. And then, you know, Pop's got to do a good job there managing it, you know, and keeping everybody in line and staying with the system and stuff like that. Like it was a pretty tough year.
So is that like, what can a team do to just like to avoid, like the frustration is just going to be there. Like, I feel like the Clippers, you know, they knew this year was maybe going to be tough but we keep the ship above water until Kawhi comes back. And they've still kind of done that, but it's just been sort of one thing after another for them in terms of being snake bit with injuries. Like, how do you, like, it's a long season. How do you get through that and like not lose your mind as a veteran team?
I think the first starting point is the coaching staff's got to bring the energy and make it so that nobody feels sorry for themselves, right? For the team, right? Like, oh, well, we suck. We're going to, you know, you got to come in with, we're going to continue doing our stuff. You know, the Memphis is an example, right? A team that's kind of, even when they weren't winning games, they were building championship habits, right? Along those lines. And that's what you're selling to these guys. Listen, like, I know we're really struggling this season. You go in you're Ty Lue, you go, guys, we were out all these guys and we just barely lost this game against Denver. You know, it's hard to spin that in the moment, but you're just looking at going like, look how close we are. We're right there and we don't even have our two top guys. Like, stay with the system. You got to kind of keep it as a coaching staff. You just got to keep it on the positive side, I think. And you got to kind of, you don't want to dwell on the bad stuff, right? Because there's nothing you can do about the injuries, right? You know, you can't fix it. So you just kind of keep going, start focusing on the development of guys and making guys better and things like that. I think it's just, you got to just, it's hard as hell to stay positive because I've been on some terrible Clipper teams before I went to San Antonio. And it was, you know, it was very hard to stay positive, but you know, it the players will react to how the coaching staff, the energy the coaching staff brings to the table. And I think it starts there, you know, and not even the front office, because the front office guys don't see them day to day. It's the coaching staff. It's the training staff. It's the video guy. It's the energy, the player development guys. It's their energy is kind of what's going to try to at least carry them going.
Also, you want to see 12 NBA players or however, a roster full of NBA players roll their eyes in unison is get a front office guy to give a rah-rah speech when things aren't going well. It's like, the suits are here. So, yeah, I think I agree with you that it has to be someone who's kind of in there day to day with the team on the plane, on the bus, in the hotel, at shoot around. Otherwise it can, it doesn't seem like it has from everything we've seen, it hasn't turned toxic in LA, in that half of LA. So I think that's a credit to Ty Lue and the coaching staff.
No, you can see these guys like playing with each other. You know, there's a lot of excitement. You know, they're playing the young guys. You know, Brandon Boston's getting minutes. Amir Coffey's getting minutes. And, like, there's genuine excitement from the bench when those guys do stuff. You know, like, they have, you like to refer to it as momentum and energy. You know, they have so much better team mo than the team across the hall. And the team across the hall has a better record. I think. I mean, at this point, it's really close. But you know,
slightly ahead.
They have the better. You know, they have the more talent, less injuries, and things like that. Like, but this other team has the momentum and the energy that you would want. And I think that would go a long way in that sense. So I think that's kind of the thing. Like when I look at the Nuggets and the Clippers, I look at it as just these are two teams that knew going into the season it was going to be an uphill climb. And, you know, they're relishing in it and they're getting the most out of it than any other team right now.
Well, that episode was an uphill climb, but I relished it, boys. That's Mo DeKeel, Seth Partnow, Jared Weiss. We'll see you next time here on the Athletic NBA Show, Nerd or Shiro.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.